philosophers in
space, 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 space.
I don't pretend to understand Brannigan's Law. I merely enforce it.
Listen, I'm not the nicest guy in the universe. Because I'm the smartest, and being nice is something stupid people do to hedge their bets.
So, do you know what I'm gonna do before I do it?
Yes.
What if I do something different?
Then I don't know that.
Cool, cool.
I wish I read that book by that wheelchair guy.
Philosophers in Space. This is episode number 43. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. That over there is Aaron Rabbi. How are you doing, sir?
Well, that all depends on our listeners, obviously. If you'd like Aaron to complain about the failures of this show and its representation of people with mental illness, skip ahead to episode 44.
Nice.
If you'd like Aaron to start by messing with Thomas's mind using quantum indeterminacy until he just gives up and throws reality against a wall, you can stay right here.
I'm going to demonstrate how unbelievably complex this, you know, quantum multiple world wave function nonsense is, and say that you also have to choose what I'm going to do at the same time, and we'll give you, I don't know, 45,000 different timestamps to go to in the podcast, which correspond to, you know, choice one on Aaron, but choice five on Thomas, and et cetera, et cetera. And you'll quickly see that it gets so complicated, it's not feasible. But that'd be interesting. Has anyone tried to do? Oh, we should have just done that. We'll do the first podcast, choose your own event. Nah, I'm sure someone's done something like that. But like, you just skip to a certain time, or you'd release. I don't know, how would you do it? Release a bunch of tracks, and then they'd go to different tracks.
Yeah, you know? I think in our case, we'd almost certainly end up producing a half-assed version that would be like
probably,
you know, 2.5 score at the end of the day because we got lazy and didn't finish it.
Welcome to You Are Here, the world's first choose-your-own-adventure sci-fi audio drama. Be advised, the fate of the characters you are about to follow lies in your hands.
That little clip right there is the intro to my choose-your-own-adventure sci-fi audio drama podcast that I've had discussions with Aaron and Thomas about, and just wanted to rub their nose in that a little bit right here. You could find info about the show at youarehearepodcast.com.
That's what would probably happen, because it's so much work. It's just an insane amount of work, right? You're just never
going to
get it.
But I'll tell you, I guess for the listeners who chose the make some joke about multiple timelines option, I was a little late to the recording, and I told Aaron, well, just go record with the quantum me that was on time, and sorry about that. I guess our timelines are no longer entwined.
Right.
We're different. You already recorded. So how did that one go?
It went great. Similarly? I mean, at this point, like, right, your point is correct. Every joke we can make can just be noun, verb, timeline. Right.
Yeah.
It's just timeline jokes all the way down.
Yep.
Branching
we
timeline.
We could quantum jokes. Collapse all those jokes into one timeline joke, and then we'll talk about that. So we're going to talk about Bandersnatch, and I was going to say something off air, and then I realized it's kind of funny to me anyway, which is you were asking, like, oh, have you seen anyone talk about such and such about Bandersnatch, you know, the Netflix Choose Your Own Adventure episode. And I said, I found myself saying, well, no, I was trying to avoid spoilers, you know, because I'm anti-spoiler for everything. I don't want to, even on the show, unless it... I even feel bad when we spoil like a 40-year-old, you know, Schwarzenegger movie. And but, you know, then I realized after having said that like it didn't matter and I didn't need to avoid any spoiler or anything, because I've watched Bandersnatch in probably 5 or 7 different endings. I don't know what the ending is. Like, I don't know what any of it is.
You don't know what any of it means.
There's nothing to spoil. Like, oh, no, you spoiled what is one. You know what I mean? It's like...
This is not a good sign for when we're going to try to watch Primer. Pointing that out. This is like intro Primer.
No, but at least Primer. Okay, well, I'll save that. Put a pin in this for After Dark. But I'm not a huge fan of the Choose Your Own Adventure format.
Okay,
but at least Primer. I assume they made a film that I get to watch as an audience member, and I don't have to take part in the creation of it. Anyway, no, but let's talk about Bandersnatch. I thought the concept was actually really fun. I'm not a huge fan of choose your own adventure type stuff, but you know, this is a super interesting thing for them to have done, and I think it's a perfect, you know, it's a perfect Black Mirror thing to do. So I do, you know, don't get me wrong, I do very much appreciate the creativity of it and stuff. It was such a good idea too. First off, it didn't work on my TV. I pull on the Netflix on my TV. Did anybody else have this experience? And it gives you and because it's Black Mirror, I get a 2-minute video about how, like, oh, you're trying to watch this on your thing. And it's like explaining, this is a choose your own adventure episode, and so you need the proper hardware. And for a second, I'm like, okay, is this the show? Like, is this part of the...
When did this start?
Yeah, like, is it...
is my whole life the show?
I don't know. It's Black Mirror. How do I know? Like, it could be going, you know? Like, maybe it gives you that video, and then, like, it keeps going, and then, you know?
That's successful branding right there is what that is.
Yeah. And so eventually I was like, oh, they're serious. Okay, this isn't the show itself. Like, I thought it was going to be some, you know, go into some fake, like back when Lost, when you'd see all the like Dharma Initiative videos, like it was going to go into some fake video about the Bandersnatch game or something. Mm-hmm. Like that. Once I determined, it's just that it doesn't work on my TV for whatever reason. They didn't bother to program in the ability, even though I have buttons that I could use to choose something. So I had to fire up the PS4 and watch it on that. So that was the first little bit of fun. But anyway, let's, after all that aside, we should head into the exposition zone.
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
So this is... yeah, how do you exposition this? It's an episode of Black Mirror where they, I think, very creatively decided to make it choose your own adventure. And of course, there's kind of the show within the show kind of thing where the person, the kid in the Netflix show is making a video game in the 80s that is based on a choose your own adventure book by an author who like went insane over it and killed his wife. Another story. And so I love it. It's very creative and you know, it has you kind of choose different things along the way. And the first choice you have to make is whether you choose the generic sugar puff cereal or the Frosted Flakes or something, or Frosties. Mm-hmm. And, I'm just curious, how did you go? Where'd you go on that one?
The first time that I watched this, I was down with the family and we were doing it by committee and we went with the Frosties.
Oh, well, I did too, but like there... This is the first thing though, is like both choices suck because they're sugary nonsense, and so I already and that it's a little bit of foreshadowing to later on when both choices suck and or they're not sugary nonsense, but they're different versions of things I would never do. So that's mm-hmm. where I very quickly get lost. But anyway, I went same direction. I actually went with the Frosties myself. So
there and you it go. Does actually make a little bit of a difference. I don't know.
If does it? So have you gone back and like tracked through all of them?
Yeah, well, not all of them. I don't know if all of them, but I've gone and looked at a lot of stuff on it, and there are. I guess we should say spoilers at this point, right? We're gonna spoil a little bit of the way this is gonna work out.
But don't be afraid of these spoilers too much. Again, like I say, it's a kind of a the thing. Like, it's not a very well defined. It's not well defined. That's not the right word. It's it's not set in stone. You know, like it's hard to spoil. I guess if we went through every combination. But then it does, that sort of undermines the whole concept of spoilers is what I'm saying. You know, like it's
I guess I would say it's worth playing through the game yourself a few times before you start looking at any playthroughs.
Yeah, like definitely do that yourself. But you know what? I just realized here's what it's like. It's like, mm-hmm. let's say I'll make up a totally fictitious, you know, thing. You've got a story like Game of Thrones, but not Game of Thrones, you know, because that's the thing everybody's worried about spoilers for all the time historically. But let's say if you have a show like that and you're like, oh, does this Prince Stephen, does that guy die or not? And then you're like, OK, well, spoiler alert, he dies or he doesn't die based on mm-hmm. what you choose. It's like, well, that's not really, there's no spoiler there then. You know what I mean? Like that's the sense I mean. Like spoilers don't really work when it's like okay, you've just outlined the possibilities. You know,
that's an interesting way to say it. I think maybe that's partly you not feeling super engorged. Some people felt really engaged with the actual decision making because they didn't know what the consequences would be, and so it would be spoilery to tell them these are the specific decision points. And also to tell them, like, here's what happens as a result of one choice or the other. Like,
yeah, and that's true. I think for me, maybe it's because I'm so boring that eventually my series of choices lead to like a boring ending where nothing happened. And right. So then for me after that, then Netflix, out of sheer pity, is just like, well, here, let's show you some of the we can't have this be the show. Let's go back and choose some actual things.
They have the Netflix version gave me a message. Was telling me about,
is there anyone
games.
Else in the room you can hand the controller to? Is there somebody help you with this?
Is Phoebe old enough yet that she could handle the remote?
Yeah, do you have a kid that might make some non-boring choices? Frankly, nobody else has chosen this.
It's amazing.
We didn't even know this was possible. Like, whatever. So, for me, that's kind of what happened. And then after I went to a boring nothing of a story, no, it wasn't nothing, but it wasn't the most action-packed one. Then it started playing all the different things for me. Like, it just goes back. I don't know how they decide it, but it just kind of goes back to different decision points and, like, just plays the other one or something. So then I was just kind of watching that. And so that's why maybe for me it feels like a void. It feels like a free form kind of, you know, what did happen? I don't even know. Couldn't tell you. But no, it's very interesting. And as far as exposition goes, we don't need to spoil too much, I don't think.
No, I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff to find out there.
Yeah.
I do recommend messing around with it some.
I love the references. There's always, in Black Mirror, there are very often references to other episodes and little... I'm sure I don't catch half of them, but maybe introduce
the characters.
Yeah, it's a. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we can. Why? What does that matter?
Well, because I want to talk about at least there one scene with the thing.
This is funny because I'm just thinking in terms of concepts with this. I think we've switched roles.
That is funny.
Like, all I'm thinking of is the concept of a choose your own adventure thing, and I thought you were going to talk about that. But I guess fine if you want to get into characters. Okay. All right, big guy. So we got this kid who is like a programmer kid, and we come to find out that, you know, he has a pretty rough relationship with his dad, who's the sole caretaker right now. And it's because back in the day, is this spoilers? I don't know. But back in the day, allegedly, his dad, this is awful. So now I'm getting all depressed. I was going to save this for an After Dark. The moral of this show, forget everything else. The moral of the show is don't try to take away your kids' dolls, because that's just not nice. I think that's a lesson I've already learned as a parent. Because the dad took away the kid's, like, bunny rabbit doll thing. And then, like, the next morning, the mom, you know, like, the kid couldn't find it. And the mom, so then therefore the mom was late. And then therefore she ended up on a different train than normal. And that train derailed. And so the mom is dead. And so... that is why, like, there's a bad relationship between the kid and the dad, and, you know, that's not, hasn't been resolved. But he's also making this game, you know, and he's also seeing a therapist, and he goes into the, I'm trying to get all the characters that matter and not in a spoilery way.
Colin's the other one who
matters. I know, yeah, he goes into this game, I guess, what would you call it, like a farm kind of thing, like a guy... Game studio, kind of, but it's like a guy who's, you know, trying to find talent and like harbor. It's like an incubator, like in
startup
Valley.
Incubator.
Yeah, yeah. So like he's finding talent, you know, and then kind of producing the games and selling them. And one of the other game makers is this guy Colin, who, you know, the main character is a huge fan of. He's played all his games, and so that's another character into the mix. And I think that pretty much does as little spoiling as possible. And from there, everything could be any number of scenarios. I couldn't tell you. It's either a giant government conspiracy and a battle for your mind, or it's not. There's either a lot of drug use or there's not much drug use. It kind of all depends on how boring you are.
Well, it's funny. I was going to talk about quantum indeterminacy, but now I'm a little obsessed with this side branch of how having this be a choose your own adventure has broken your entire sense of what a spoiler is.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any difference in spoilers between what you've been saying and any other kind of spoilers. But because it has these forking paths, you're like, is this, like, you've gone totally postmodern. You've gone from strict classical determinist spoiler to postmodern quantum spoiler. And you're just like, what even is a spoiler? And this is fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, that's so true. That's what I'm saying. Like, this has thrown me for a loop because there aren't spoilers for things. Like, you can't just now
everything exists simultaneously. Nothing can be spoiled. Oh, that's so good. I think that's great. And the other little scene that we need to talk about that's related to all of this that's going to tie in is the. When the main character is having trouble making his game at one point, he goes with Colin, the other game super guy, back to his place. And Colin turns out to be a, like, Hunter S. Thompson, drop drugs and talk about the government and, like, theories of, like, conspiracy theories, but also theories about quantum paths and the relationship between multiple worlds. So that's the philosophy that I want to dive into more in this first episode is the stuff that they almost just tease a little bit, which is the idea of quantum immortality that some people have argued at various points arises as a result of how we understand quantum theory.
Quantum immortality. All right. Well, it sounds like we're on our way to the philosophy zone, I guess.
Yeah, philosophy danger zone, because it's another one like Rocco's Basilisk where I want to give a better warning than Netflix does for content. I think this maybe Bandersnatch could have used a little bit of content warning. This is a theory that some people have been concerned about talking about because it might encourage problematic behavior because it has to do with issues of suicide and immortality. And some people have considered testing these theories in ways that might be really dangerous and problematic.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to throw that out there and a little bit seriously, to be
honest. Just say no to quantum theory, kids. Just
be very careful with quantum theory.
Yeah. Do not try this philosophizing at home.
So this was an idea that's been discussed by folks like a guy named Max Tegmark and one of the main advocates of multiple worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, a guy named Everett, who maybe in theory believed some version of this as far back as like 57, they maybe didn't talk about it as much because, again, there was a little concern about what publicizing these kind of theories might actually suggest. But I found a good paper that talks about it that sort of is like, well, there's a wiki page about this now, so I guess we might as well just get on with it. So what this has to do with is, and it's related to things like Schrodinger's cat, it's a thought experiment called quantum suicide or quantum Russian roulette, where it's trying to understand how quantum indeterminacy makes sense, how it works, that you can have either some version of a superimposed reality where both things are true at the same time.
Yeah, we need to give a we're not physicists.
So I'm trying to think about how much to break this down. So it's I'm not a physicist either, but I can explain it this much, right? There's this view that on a quantum level, things like a radioactive particle, when it decays, when it has a half-life, it's like 50% of the time it decays and 50% of the time it doesn't, right? And so the Schrodinger's cat hypothetical is, there's this radioactive isotope next to the cat, and you don't know whether it has decayed or not in such a way that it has killed the cat. And if you haven't opened the box yet, it's possible that it both is and isn't dead at the same time, and it doesn't.
I think you might have skipped. So yeah, you got the particle hooked up to a poison device. I don't even think you said that.
Oh right, particle hooked up to a poison device. Excuse me. Yeah, right.
Like the cat just dies for no reason.
The radiation murders it or something. I'm not a scientist.
I mean the whole it's like the slit experiment as well, where it's like You got powerful experimental results, like undeniable experimental results that suggest certain things are unknown in unknown states until you measure them. And like people were trying to grasp for years, and I may be still trying to grasp with, I don't know, but it's the whole Einstein, you know, the universe, God doesn't play dice kind of thing. They're trying to grasp with like, how could this be like that something is in a state where you don't even know what it's both is and isn't, you know, when you're talking about that particle decaying or whatever. And so this thought experiment was like, this can't be. It was actually designed by Schrodinger with the intent to show like how absurd this is. Like there's no way that this could be right. It, from his point of view, I think later on people have taken it different ways, but from his point of view at the time, I believe it was, and of course, you know, physicists feel free to correct us on any of this, but it was, the idea was like, see, this can't be right because if you hooked up a device to the particle that would unleash some poison in a box for this cat, based on whether or not the particle had decayed, then you'd have a cat that was both dead and not dead because nobody's measured it yet or whatever, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that's good. I just wanted to, so we're less concerned in this particular situation with what's going on when it's in the superposition of being both alive and dead, and more concerned with what happens at the moment in which the wave function collapses, as they would say, and it either is alive or dead, basically. Make sure I get this right. On the Copenhagen interpretation, the theory goes the waveform collapses into one determined reality. It either is alive or dead. Okay,
there's just one timeline. I don't know that it would be right to say determined. I think Copenhagen, it's not a determined reality. It's that it could be a based on probability distribution, you know.
But it ends up being one finite reality. The difference is between that and a multiple worlds view. So on the multiple worlds view, the particle actually, what happens is when the quantum event occurs, two realities split off, one in which it does decay and one in which it doesn't decay.
Right.
Does that make sense? So this comes back to our discussion of multiple worlds in when we were talking about Rick and Morty, right? This is much like David Lewis was using multiple worlds to explain statements like I could have done otherwise, or there could have been a character who did this thing. Modal realism, right? This is a kind of quantum realism that would say that every potential quantum possibility branches off into a new timeline.
Right? I have to say I struggle with this a lot. I'm sure everybody does, and I don't want to. So, but I guess we can put that aside and just talk about, you know, if that's the basic framework, very basic overview of the framework we're working with, what's the quantum suicide part?
Right. So,
and quantum immortality.
The idea goes, if you had, it's sort of like imagine being the cat in the Schrodinger's cat, right? Okay. If you had a quantum gun that 50% of the time kills you and 50% doesn't, right? The question is, what happens to you when you fire that gun? Do you definitely either live or die? Or do you, as some would argue in the multiple worlds view, live forever from your point of view, no matter what? That's the sort of where this rubber meets the road question hinges. Might have some impact
idea,
on people's actual
idea
reality.
The idea being you live forever no matter what because anthropic principle kind of you're the one who's alive. Is that
right? You're super clever.
Like basically, Yeah,
exactly. It's basically the anthropic principle for timelines, right?
Right.
You're not
going to find it likely that you'll exist in a timeline in which you don't exist, basically.
Right, exactly. So, in any situation in which there's a chance that there's a fork in the timeline where you persist, right, you are only ever going to experience things in a timeline like that. And so, from your perspective, you will always be in the branches of the timeline where you survive. You would necessarily always be in them.
Right. That makes some sense. Interesting concept. Oh, I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever. No, okay. I don't think any of this makes any sense. But
you can at least see why it might be appealing to some people.
I feel like most of this stuff is in the same category of like when I have, you know, debates with religious people and like, no, God is there. Both is free will and God is there directing every part of it and controlling it. But he's there. It's like you can say the words, but do you really understand? I always think it's like, no, it's a triangle, but it has four sides. And then you're like, but that doesn't, no, I said the words, so I understand it, right? But yes. I often find that to be how I feel about it. I won't speak for anybody else, but often how I feel with this is I can describe a lot of it, and I can say the words that signify, oh sure, many worlds versus Copenhagen, but like I cannot actually understand what it means. Like
I want to say that I know what you're saying, but I feel like it's a little ironic in this context.
When you say like perspective, when you talk about perspective,
yeah,
how would perspective work in this world? Who's like, isn't it weird that when you talk about quantum immortality, somehow it's okay that there's any number of just infinite numbers of me in different realities in different times. But if there's one where there's a, you know, a quantum gun, then therefore I'm going to be in the one that survived. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know whose perspective, what, and also what space is this occupying? What physical space is all that when something splits? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so hard to understand.
There is a lot of pushback on this. And there is a lot of people who would say that, like, there's a lot of problems, a lot of places where you can break down this argument along the lines of like, you know, just because this might work on a quantum level doesn't mean that applies for us medium-sized dry goods.
Well, like, and I was going to say something about that too, because I actually wanted to try to look into, just very, you know, obviously quickly on a surface level, like what does this apply to? Because I find that oftentimes loosely in conversation, people always jump from, or, you know, be it a YouTube video or whatever it is, people always jump from, yeah, see the slit experiment. So it was a wave and a particle. And so therefore, when you decide to go to work, you both went to work and not work. And it, like, that part is to me a little confusing. If this, I was trying to figure out, what does this actually apply to? You know, you're talking about decaying of particles, and you're talking about, you know, I'm seeing the, you know, probability distributions of where electrons precisely are in within atoms kind of thing. And I just wonder, is there a solid story from, okay, the electron is either kind of in this probability distribution over here in the hydrogen atom or this one, and that can trickle all the way up to macro decisions, you know, like, therefore we recorded and we didn't record, you know what I mean? Like, is there a way to get there? Or, and I think this might be, from my understanding, kind of what the Copenhagen interpretation is, that stuff kind of cancels out in a way, like it doesn't track all the way up to major macro decisions and actions and objects and stuff.
Yeah, the answer is you're right and no, right? Like, there's very little evidence that you can go from quantum indeterminacy on the microscopic level up to sort of radical indeterminacy on the macroscopic level. It doesn't seem to work that way. And there is something else interesting here. And I think you're totally right to push back on that. But while we are talking about the multiple worlds interpretation, I wanted to point out something in this version that is different than the David Lewis version that we talked about. In that one, if you'll remember, causality was separate in each different universe, right? What defined a universe was that it was causally distinct from other universes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. In this interpretation, universes that are causally very similar, and I'm not going to get too far into what that means, but universes where the numbers break roughly the same way as in our quote unquote universe are causally interconnected in bundles on this view. I was talking with a quantum person who knows some of this stuff a little bit today, and like what they think is that like there are sort of nexuses of a bunch of like causal clouds that are different things that like are similar enough and come together, and those functions constitute our universe, right? That what we think of as like our universe is really an overlay of a bunch of very closely connected causal pathways. Does that make any sense? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but like
it does. But I think
it's a different thing.
What I pointed out last time when we talked about this, that other version of the non-quantum version possible world, was it David Lewis?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Was that like I often find that we are very human centric when we think about this stuff because we're humans, where we're like, oh, there's going to be a different world where I turned left instead of right. And I'm always thinking, but if we're to believe many worlds, like seriously, if we're just and by the way, like that's prominent physicists think that has to be true. Like many worlds just is true, mm-hmm. based on the math, including Sean Carroll. I had him on my show, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I tried to get him. And again, he said all the words that I understand. And then I still don't get it. Like, I still don't fully understand how there could be this many realities. But let's say we're to take many worlds interpretation of quantum physics seriously. There's a different reality for every single time there's ever one of these probability functions. Like, where... Mm-hmm. every single particle and interaction of particle. I simply do not know how to even fathom what that would look like. You know, you know what I mean to say? It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, a difference between turning left and turning right today. It's like, no, there's a bazillion, like an unbelievable number of different realities. And like every step of the way, there would be so many branches and possibilities and stuff that I just can't even fathom it.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, it may not be like quite as many as it might suggest there, but it feels like it's functionally infinite, which presents all sorts of super weird problems. I wanted to, before we run out of time, maybe include a quote from one of the guys who I mentioned, Tegmark, talking about this issue of how it relates to subjective immortality, right? Like, If that makes some sense.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. He says, because he actually got a bunch of questions about this and felt uncomfortable about it. So he says, here's a brief comment on the issue of whether MWI, multiple worlds interpretation, implies subjective immortality, which is the thing that people would actually care about. This has bothered me for a long time, and a number of people have emailed me about it after The Guardian and New Science articles came out. I agree that if the argument were flawless, I should expect to be the oldest guy on the planet, severely discrediting the Everett hypothesis. However, I think there's a flaw. After all, dying isn't a binary thing where you either are dead or alive. Rather, there's a whole continuum of states of progressively decreasing self-awareness. What makes the quantum suicide work is that you are forced, that you force an arbitrary transition. I suspect that when I get old, my brain cells will gradually give out. Indeed, that's already starting to happen. So that I keep feeling self-aware, but less and less so. The final death being quite anticlimactic. Sort of like when an amoeba croaks. Do you buy this? I think that's a great quote.
Was that part of the quote, or was that...
That's the end of the quote. Me? That's how it ends.
Do you buy this? Like, that should be with every... Yeah, many... Do you buy this? Is everybody... Do you guys...
4 score and 7 years ago, do you buy this? Anyway,
yeah, So I just to make sure we filled all that out.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you talked about the trigger warning and the content warning, is that there is an interpretation of all this that would, and it's actually depicted in parts of Bandersnatch, I think,
mm-hmm.
in Colin,
right,
where it's like, no, there are. We're just on one of maybe infinite timelines, and I can kill myself right now. It doesn't matter. I'll still be alive somewhere else. That's where people start to worry about like the danger of these ideas, is this feeling of like immortality because there's infinite use on different timelines. And so that quote was that sort of to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly, right? So when they're out there talking about killing themselves and he's saying, like, what matters is the impact it has on other timelines, he's not just saying that there are other people out there, he's saying you can influence yourself in other important ways, in other timelines, by doing things that include killing yourself in this timeline, and it won't ultimately matter, and that's very problematic, it seems like. So I think it's worth... You know, and I think that's the exact kind of stuff that the folks who originally were talking about these theories were very nervous about propagating in a casual kind of way. And I think it's a fair critique of the show that we'll get into and talking later about how this episode didn't really manage well with the issues that it was critiquing.
Well, maybe. I do love this idea, though, mm-hmm. and I think that the show did a great job of show, especially when, you know, the author of this book that his game is based on, that's like a choose your own adventure thing. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, the whole story is he went insane because he was obsessed with, like, how, you know, it doesn't, well, I mean, a lot of things, but like this decision tree kind of drove him insane of like, wow, what does it matter if all these decisions, you know, if there's infinite timeline, just that kind of feeling of. And I think that author had the feeling that someone was controlling him or something, which is mm-hmm. something we can get to. And it's kind of a, you know, again, a breaking the fourth wall kind of thing of like someone is controlling the guy in the game. I don't know. I thought it was very creative. But we'll have to go further into depth on what you're talking about, on this specific idea of quantum suicide and quantum immortality.
I think the main takeaway from that quote that I wanted to just get in there that relates to all this is that it does matter in this timeline, and it matters in an important, and it's similar to the conversation that you get in Rick and Morty that we haven't quite gotten to with our discussion of the show on here, but I think you would agree that, like, one of the main arcs of the show is how can things matter in a multiverse where there are so many copies of yourself. And by the end of the most recent season, there's a bit of an evolution on the idea that it matters because of the personal relationships you have in this timeline. And at least I think it matters to say very clearly, you shouldn't assume that your subjective experience will always persist beyond any kind of event because of these ideas of quantum indeterminacy.
Yeah, well put. And, you know, I just, sorry, I know we're going over, but I'm just thinking about it. And I think that there is really good reason to be concerned about these ideas. You know, I remember one of my early memories as a, I don't know how old I would have been, but as seeing the news as a kid, you know, there's that whole movement of people who thought they could kill themselves and then they'd wind up on the alien ship but with a comet and all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Like Heaven's Gate convention.
Yeah, like they. I mean, sure, I'm sure a lot of those people might have had a lot, it's just things going on in their lives and brains that would make them susceptible. But like, I don't know. I think that these ideas can be really powerful, and I find it believable that there are people who, if you get obsessed enough with these ideas, could end up harming themselves. So I think it is. I think right to be really concerned with these ideas and kind of giving that content warning. But I like how you put it. And I also add that, like, everyone keep in mind, we could always be really wrong about these ideas and how these things work. And then you've killed yourself. So that's keep in mind, you could always be wrong. Like, is it the safe bet of just sticking to your own timeline, making sure your personal world here that you're experiencing right now is in pretty good order and doing your best with that one. That's always a good bet. I'm just saying, like, that's, you did all the other stuff could very easily be wrong. So don't get too carried away. That's what I would say.
The quantum version of stay in your own lane.
stay in your own timeline, everyone. Stay in your own.
We definitely want to include that a discussion of how video games have, like, the classic trope of how video games harm minds and how people get obsessed and lose track with reality, because that has been something that's been used to attack these things. But I think it is interesting that it can also, that it's a discussion worth having, and especially how representations can affect people's personal narratives. So, but we shouldn't go too long here for Brian's sake.
All right. Yeah, this is, man, action packed. So much to talk about here. And if it was a little haphazard or out of order, that's just because you chose the wrong decision tree. You should have, you know,
go back and listen again and again. Make sure you re-download every time. You have to reset it by re-downloading.
Yeah. Any problems with this episode were in fact your fault. They were the problems of the chooser and not us. We produced just all kinds of perfect copies of this, but it just, if you didn't choose the right decision tree, then it didn't work out for you. But that's okay, you know.
If you want the happy ending, you have to pay for the After Dark.
Yeah, let's.
And I'm okay with the way I said that. I'm gonna keep that and let that lie.
Yeah, we've got to go After Dark. I think there's so much, actually, so many issues related to this, and also stuff we didn't even get to, that I think the job of spoiler or teasering next week, I think it'd be pretty easy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think unless everyone votes to just quit out because it's too much work, I think we should do a part two and talk about some more of the really important issues that are raised in this that we won't be able to fill in just in the After Darks.
All right. And then also we've got to thank our top patrons. And what are they going to make you say this week?
Well, they got some good stuff in this particular timeline. So I'd like to give a special thanks to, we named our new puppy after Yuri Gagarin, which is the first guy who went into space.
Right.
And then the other one is Descartes the pig says, "I think, therefore I am." That's really wonderful.
I always love a good pun. That's fun. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, folks, so much. And by the way, you want to go join their ranks. You can make Aaron say some funny stuff, too, at patreon.com/0G. And also, you can get our After Dark, in which we've got a lot to talk about here. I have some observations on what I went through in my Choose My Own Adventure. But also, I know Aaron has some good philosophy stuff. So tune in for the After Dark, patrons. Everybody else, we'll see you next week.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/0G, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
Yeah, it goes
that thing.
Mm-hmm. When it started making that noise, my Google Home lit up. My Google speaker. And am I reading too much into this? If I'm I think there's a conspiracy. Like, I think these things are talking to each other.
I do, you know, feel like if I had one every moan, I'd be like, is this the moment? Is this when you turn on me?
Yeah, is this whenever, yeah, my speaker like sprouts some arms and legs and gets up and starts beating me to death?
Right, your sudden but inevitable betrayal is coming, yeah. Right?
Kirscher, sudden but inevitable betrayal.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/0G. You can find us on Twitter at @0GPhilosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.